Philip Morgan.
Listen, hey man,
how are you?
Super good. How are you?
I am good. I am good. It's it hasn't rained much in Portland, Oregon, so it's been a very uncharacteristically sunny winter.
Oh, you are blessed indeed. Enjoy it. I mean, maybe that's like a permanent climate change thing. I don't know. But I just know that when I moved there, we had like 2 years of unusually dry winters. And I was like, oh, this is not so bad. I don't know what people were complaining about. It did not last.
Well, the last 2 years were two of the wettest years on record. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So now that we're getting this, I'm like, hey, this isn't bad at all. I could totally do this every year.
Yeah, I got to say, a Portland winter on the dry side is almost tolerable. almost tolerable.
I see where your head's at, Philip.
I'm just such a baby when it comes to that kind of stuff. I don't mind paying more to live in what I consider a nicer climate.
Fair enough. Well, speaking of nicer climates, here's a non sequitur. What are you going to promote today, Philip?
So we're here recording on Valentine's Day, February 14th. I'm running a workshop starting in March, and it's called, it's the first of three workshops, and it's on how you make that decision about how you might specialize. And for some people, that's a really easy decision. For others, it is fraught with stress and uncertainty and all sorts of things. So I have a pretty good process for moving through that. And I'm going to walk folks through that in a 4-week workshop. I don't have a nifty URL, so here's the deal. If anybody listening to this would like information on the workshop, or is just like trust the chef enough to order the dish without knowing what's in it, they could just, in either case, you could just email me. It's Philip with one L, PHILIP at philipmorganconsulting.com. So that workshop is priced somewhere between $600 and $800, depending on whether you jump on it and get the early bird discount. And it's a month-long thing, and it starts the beginning of March. And just email me if you're wanting more information, or if you're wondering if it's a fit. I'll probably suggest we schedule a brief call to discuss it, and we'll take things from there. So that's what I'd like to call attention to this week. How about you?
So today I published an article on the difference between inbound and outbound lead generation. And the reason that's so important is I get asked a lot, hey, I hear everybody telling me I should be generating LinkedIn leads. I hear everybody telling me I should be writing content. I hear everybody telling me fill in the blank, right? So everybody's got something to sell, including mm-hmm. me, of course. And ironically, I don't recommend that you do outbound lead generation, but it's a lot more nuanced than that. So if you go to my site, liston.io, and you just click articles, you'll see it there. And I recommend you give it a read. It's long. It's very thorough. It goes over the differences in timing and quality of leads and how you're able to build trust. So it's not just an either or black and white kind of thing where I make the decision for you. It will really give you all of the tools you need to make the decision for yourself, which is what you should be doing in your business. So please do read it and enjoy it. No opt-in necessary, by the way.
So, I'm just going to read this while you record the podcast on your own.
I'm sure it's going to come with a grade from you, which I would expect. So a couple things have happened in the last week or two, and this keeps coming up, and it's related to the should I do inbound or outbound question, in that we had a mutual friend ask us and some of our other friends in a mastermind that we're involved with, should I do a podcast? And of course, that is a very loaded question. And, for me, spurs dozens of more questions that I would need to know the answers to before I could give advice. But I also noticed that Jonathan Stark on his Business of Authority podcast released an episode recently where the question was, should I write a book? And his short answer was yes, but, insert caveats 1 through 50. Mm-hmm.
Right.
And it got me thinking, Philip, that there's really a big question here, which is, how do I make a decision to do a long-term, long kind of slogging marketing project for my business? Whether it's a podcast, whether it's a book, it takes a long time. It's a very large commitment just to deliver the minimum viable piece of it.
Yeah, I was listening to when we talked about email marketing, and that same sort of meta question came up. And I don't think we were that far apart, but I was kind of like, well, don't even think about it if you don't have like a plan or feel like you can sustain the effort of interacting with your email lists. Like, don't start building an email list. It was in the marketing infrastructure episode that we did. Right. And to me, this is a very related question. And yeah, I mean, I guess there's some different ways you could ask the question. It's like, how much energy should you put into it? Or at what point in your business's maturity should you start something that requires a major commitment? But let's just approach it the way you phrased it, which is, I think, quite good. So, I mean, what do you think? What's your initial thought about that? Because to me, it's a lot about context and constraints.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, my priceless business advice for every business question is, it depends. So I would start there. And really, I think the bigger question is never, you know, this worked for someone else, should I do it? I think the question is, what am I trying to accomplish? And based on that, does this get me closer to my goal? So separately, I'm not referring to our mutual friend now. I talked to a different friend today who's thinking about starting a podcast, and he was asking me all kinds of technical questions. Mm-hmm. And I asked him, who is this for? And he said, that's a really good question.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
And I said, well, you should start thinking about that. And I said,
I'm weeping.
I said, let me ask you another question. Why do you want to do this? And he said, well, I don't want to rely on income from a company forever. And I feel I need to have some multimedia skills and to start building my personal brand. And I have a lot to share. And I feel like I need some process where I can start to figure out those things. And I said,
that's a pretty good reason why.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So I said, all right, that doesn't sound bad. That's a good starting place. I bet it's not going to be the same in 3 or 6 months as it is when you start, but that's okay. You'll figure it out.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm naturally inclined to encourage people to just get over their fear of like, what if it's not perfect? Or what if I change my mind, and just do it in public anyway? But that's like half the equation, is knowing like, why are you doing this? He or she needs to figure out the other half, right? Is who is it for? Because without those two things, a pretty clear vision of what those are, you know what happens, which is garbage. Total trash. No, not really, but it's not as, you know, it suffers. The project suffers a lot when it doesn't have those guiding lights of who and why.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, if I asked him, why do you want to do this? And he said, well, you know, I love the Joe Rogan podcast and I'd love to have as many listeners as Joe Rogan. Then I would say, right. I would say, I don't know if this is the way to do it, or if that's even a goal that is worthy of being addressed when you start. Yeah. Similarly, I think the number one thing I hear from a lot of people, whether it's a podcast or a book, is they say, well, I want to launch some giant career and I want to quadruple my revenue. And that also feels like, you know, if you're going to undertake a single marketing project, it's probably not a realistic goal. My cat is singing backup vocals right now, by the way.
Yeah, he knows the tune. That brings up a not totally tangential question. I've run across this idea that, you know, the revenue that you generate in your business is sort of the byproduct of the impact you have. You know, maybe the scale, maybe the depth of impact. Maybe there's some kind of weird kind of basic multiplication formula you could use to represent this, like revenue equals impact times, you know, scale or audience size or whatever, right? But there's this general philosophy that you don't focus on the revenue, you focus on the impact you're trying to have. And I think there's another philosophy, which is like businesses are machines for making money at the end of the day. Do you think about that? And do you think either one of those is a more useful way to think about this?
Well, I got into this argument this morning, actually. So the timing is funny.
Nice.
Because, you know, I was talking to some friends and they were encouraging me, because I'll just give full transparency. I was saying, you know, I started this coaching thing and I'm getting really a surprising amount of traction on the marketing side. Like, people want to hear my message. They're contacting me afterwards. Like, I'm getting fan mail from people. Like, this feels different than mm-hmm. it's been. And it, you know, I'm onto something, but I'm sucking at selling coaching. And, which is highly ironic, of course. And they basically said, just focus on the kind of value or impact side of it.
Right.
Sort of build it and they will come.
Right.
And I just don't believe that that's enough, mm-hmm. And also what it implies is that time is the most critical ingredient. And I would argue on the business as a machine side, which I don't fully agree with that, because there are people involved and they're not machines. At least not in a literal sense. We can get into that whole meta discussion some other time, but you know, there are people involved, but time is only one of many ingredients. The reason that time is important for some people is because they're maybe not pulling other levers, is what I would suggest. And so I do believe impact is huge, but I also believe there are things that you can do to catalyze the development of your business without alienating anyone or treating them like crap. And that's the balance that I want to strike.
What do you mean when you say time is important? I kind of missed how that figured into this.
Okay, so let's, to your point about impact. See, you asked me philosophical questions and now I'm trying to talk fast and it just doesn't work. So is it all about impact? If I find a way to create the largest impact, will my business just naturally grow? Right. That's the philosophy on the one hand. And what I would say is, if you focus just on impact, unless you have a runaway hit, which is very rare, you will have to rely on time to transmit your marketing for you. People will tell other people, oh, Philip has the best thing around. You should talk to Philip about positioning. Right? So it implies that time is this crucial, irreplaceable ingredient, and that it's just going to take as much time as it's going to take, and you have no control over that, because mm-hmm. all you should do is focus on the impact, and when you do it, everything else will take care of itself.
I got you. Okay, yeah. And that is I don't see a lot of people who really believe that, but I mean, just a week or two ago, I got an email from a guy who was like, had all kinds of ideas about what I was doing wrong with my marketing.
Oh yeah, I get some of those too.
And my response was, okay, well, here's my vision. What would you do?
Uh-huh.
And his response was sort of like the way he expressed it, and I fully acknowledge that maybe I didn't get what he was saying, but the way he expressed it was this very kind of pure, simplistic ideal of, well, you know, if you're onto something that's true, then it's going to take over the world. That truth will be so powerful that eventually it'll just kind of get out there. And what he was implying was, I don't have to do anything except publish this truth in some form in one place, and it's just going to spread throughout the world. And my thought was, I don't think you could maybe count on one hand the number of things that have actually worked that way. And there's a lot of really valuable things that have worked a different way, which is they're true and they're valuable. I mean, truth is kind of a, to me, a red herring here. It's just they're valuable to somebody, and then somebody really put their back into spreading the word,
exactly,
or marketing it, as we might say, and that's what made it, you know, impactful for people.
So the thing that I really disliked about this conversation I was having this morning, maybe they'll listen to this, probably not, but I'm comfortable saying, there was this creation of a false dichotomy where it's like, it's either impact or you're just out to make a buck and like make this machine hum.
Oh,
and I'm
right.
Like, well, that's not true. Like,
right.
I need to have impact. And this is what I said to them. This was from Josh Kaufman's personal MBA book. If it doesn't make money, it's just a hobby. It's not a business. Right. Like,
right. And the amount of effort you can put into a hobby is less than you could put into a business that's working really well. Like the business making money kind of gives you permission to really lean all the way into it, I think.
Well, right. Yeah. I was,
because you're not sitting on a trust fund.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. So yeah, that's what I was thinking. And, so how did, I feel like we got off topic. How does this
relate?
Well,
that would totally be my fault. All right. So let's walk this back. So
I kind of brought up
this, you know, this sort of two approaches thing.
Uh-huh.
Right.
Yeah.
So before that, we were talking about, should you start a major project, or what are some of the considerations? And I'm going to pretend like I was brilliant in bringing up this tangent. If you start a major project, it's not going to be something you can just do and kind of, most likely, it's not going to be something you can just do and it takes on a life of its own and it just grows wings and flies out of the nest without you doing anything else. There's more to it than just the thing, right? There's, if you're doing a podcast, it's more than just recording podcast episodes. Although with this podcast, we don't do much more than that. But let's say that you want it to have this deep impact, right? Maybe your personal goal for this endeavor is, well, I want it to bring me new clients, or I want it to position me as a, you know, this respected authority or whatever. Like if you're aiming high, that's probably what you're thinking. You're not just going to, it's not just recording the podcast. It's not just writing the articles or the emails or whatever. There's a whole nother part to it. And maybe that's really what that whole tangent was about.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I mean, and that's what I found. I mean, before we started recording this, I've been on this kind of tear to form really close marketing relationships. And, you know, there's the connection part, and then there's the follow-up, and then there's the, you know, doing them a favor and who can I introduce you to. And it's not like every new initiative that you undertake is going to have 10 layers underneath it that you're not even thinking about. So I agree with that. But when I think about these long-term initiatives, I guess the one thing I think about always is being crystal clear on your goals. And if you're not clear on your goals, you shouldn't undertake them. Right? Like I'm much more a fan of, if you don't know why you're doing this, let's just hold off until you figure that out. And then once you figure out what your goals are, then you can figure out, should I do a podcast or write a book or create a webinar series or a Facebook Live, whatever the thing is that you're thinking about, it'll be easier to figure out what project you should undertake if you know exactly what you're trying to do with it.
Yeah. I mean, let me throw out a, not a disagreement, but just an alternate take on that. And I'm curious to hear what you think about this, Liston. So I'm not always the best at doing things the way you described.
Okay.
I also think that what you described is, it's the ideal way to do it, is to have this real clarity about, okay, what's the goal? Why am I doing this? Who is it meant for? Those are critical questions. I've done what feels like a lot of experimentation without having that clear vision before starting it. And I've done things like, hey, let's do a podcast and see how it goes. That's kind of how the Consulting Pipeline podcast started out. I think when I started that, and just by way of context, that's one of the things that I'm doubling down on in 2018. That's one of the things I'm committed to doing to prioritizing more, to doing a better job of. And that is because it's turned out to be so effective for things that are important to my business. So, but I didn't really know, I didn't have those goals. The goals were not very clear. The goal was try a podcast. And so I tried a podcast, and it people loved it, and I got great feedback, and it just turned out to be a good fit. But I think what was missing was some amount of maturity in my business, some amount of self-knowledge about, you know, the fact that I have this freaking great radio voice and people just love hearing it. And yeah, I'm being a little joking, but also there's a real element of truth there. Like, people have said, oh God, I just love your voice. Will you please record an audio version of the positioning manual? And I'm flattered, and I think that's wonderful. And I'm also like, okay, well, that's a strength, and I can play to my strengths because I think that's a good idea. So that worked out well, despite not following best practices about having the clarity of the goal. Like, and now if I was to travel back in time and say, okay, what could this podcast accomplish and what's the goal for it? Well, now I have that clarity. It's number one, to educate my audience. It's a service to them. And number two, to develop trust so that the people who need my help feel emboldened to reach out to me. Like, they feel like they trust me enough to move quickly into a paying, client relationship. And those are now the two goals, but it took time to kind of figure that out. And so I'm not contradicting or arguing against what you're saying, but I have seen, I've seen cases where that's worked out well for me. And then I've also seen cases where it was a complete waste of time because it lacked that clarity at the outset.
So I do believe that trial and error is important. I guess one place I'm coming from is that a lot of people I talk to get really down if something doesn't work out. And people comment on me and how fast I move on things and go, I don't know how you do that. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that to brag, just to say that I'm okay with moving fast and trying things and failing. And so maybe part of what I'm doing is trying to calibrate against my own personality. However, I would say, if we think back to your podcast, and I asked you at the time, why are you doing this? You were probably like, I don't know, seems like a good experiment. I don't know if anybody will listen, but I might as well give it a try. Is that fair to say?
That's pretty close. Yeah. That's probably pretty close to what I would have said.
Right. So on the flip side of that, if I asked you, why are you doing this podcast? And you said, well, I'd love to have it be the number one source of all my leads. And then I would go, well, how are you going to grow your listenership, and what kind of content do you drive them to? And then what happens after they see that content, and how do you convert a listener into a sale, right? Like, that comes with a whole different set of baggage. That is a different podcast than the one you set out to do. So I think that matters also. I think it's not just, should I write a book? Should I do a podcast? It's like, well, what kind do you want to do? Because they come in all varieties.
Yeah, that's for sure. I think it was Seth Godin I heard say in somewhere. It's hard with that guy to know exactly where you heard him say something, because he's publishing all the time in a lot of different ways.
Yeah.
He said, nothing that has achieved mainstream, it's something to the effect of, it's very rare for something to achieve mainstream success if it does not fit into a genre, which is related to what you're saying. Genres are kind of shortcuts for your audience to understand what the heck this is, so they don't have to do all the cognitive load of figuring out what it is. And also for the creator, I think it's, I'm pretty sure I read that in Perennial Seller.
Perennial Seller.
Ryan Holiday was quoting Seth Godin, which means I have no idea where Seth Godin said that originally. But anyway, it rang true to me that that's part of the decision of some major project, is to basically say, we're not going to reinvent the wheel here. We're going to do something that looks similar to something that is a pattern that succeeds.
Right. Yeah.
A genre or a format and in fact, I think that's one of the shortcuts, is just copy something you like. not the content, but the structure of it or the feeling of it or something like that.
Yeah, I did that last week and it seems to be working. More on that later. Okay. Well, tell me, if I asked you, Philip, should I do this? Should I do some big undertaking? You know, maybe you ask me, what are my goals or what are you trying to accomplish? Are there any other questions that come to your mind in order to kind of coach me through how to think about this?
Yeah. So standard questions I would ask are, how much time do you have for this and how volatile is your schedule? When I say volatile, I mean some people, and this is not like a judgment or some kind of like negative comment about them, but some people have very volatile schedules. Like they cannot predict when something's going to blow up. You know, think of somebody like running a SaaS that's got a lot of technical debt and just every week some kind of shit is hitting the fan that they just couldn't have really predicted. And they don't, and you could say, oh, that's a failure of planning. You know, if your SaaS is blowing up on you routinely and you're not planning for that, that's a failure of planning. And maybe that's true, but that's not really what I'm getting at. Is I just think I've noticed in working with lots of people that some people have a lot of control over their schedule and it's pretty predictable. And if they say, I'm going to do half a day of business development on Friday, and it happens most of the time, then I would say they have a pretty not volatile schedule, which can be a good thing. Or there are people who have very volatile schedules that just have learned how to deal with that. And that's fine too. So I think that matters because at least my approach to big projects, like one of the projects that I've taken on, you know, voluntarily, nobody asked me to do this. But if you go to specializationexamples.com, you'll see a list of businesses that are somehow specialized. Most of them are dev shops, but some of them are marketing agencies or consultants. And I'm building that list. So I've got a Google spreadsheet that's got over 1,000 candidates in there. And I don't do this as often as I like, but I try each day to pull off two or three, just categorize them, do a short little review is not quite the right word for it, just add some commentary, and then move that to a different tab in the Google spreadsheet that's exposed on my website. And then that updates a table on the website. And now I've got two or three more sites that people can look at to get a good example of specialized businesses that they can sort of learn from and just see how it's done. And that's a huge project because I've got like over, I forget what the exact number is, but over 1,000 rows in my backlog to look at. And not all of those will make it onto the live table. So my idea about how any sane person would approach that is not to like take a 2-week vacation and try to power through the whole thing. To me, that's crazy. I mean, some people maybe could make it work that way. I just cannot imagine making it work that way. So I think what you do is you just, you know, spend half an hour every day and you plug away at it until it's done. So a little bit of that, those questions about schedule volatility are, I just think slow and steady wins the race. So that biases my thinking. I think someone with a volatile schedule could say, I'm taking the whole week off and I'm going to work on this project and I'm going to knock it out and blah, blah, blah. I think that tends to be more of an edge case than an actual successful way to tackle a humongous project.
Yeah, I agree. And then I think the final question I would ask the person is, tell me if this has leverage, even if it doesn't work. So, right, if you're going to build this giant table and you go up and look at all these thousands of different agencies or organizations or firms that are specialized, how much do you learn about specialization in that process, even without the end product, which is this asset that shows people different specialized businesses? Similarly, if someone is going to go write a book, right, do you want writing to be a critical part of your ongoing life and marketing and sales strategy? If so, go try it, right? Because even if the book doesn't work out, you'll have leverage based on you know, figuring out how to crystallize your ideas and communicate them and structure them and package this whole thing together. And there's all these other benefits that come from your activities aside from the end product. So I also believe that any activities that you're doing that's associated with this large project should have some leverage for you as well.
Yeah, that's a really great point. I mean, not to make me the star of the show, but yeah, even if nobody ever visited that website, specializationexamples.com, I've still got more case studies now I can use in updated versions of the positioning manual. I have examples I can point people to when they are working with me in the positioning accelerator program. So all of those are very valuable byproducts of this this project. So I think of it as this public-facing asset, this resource for people. But even if that aspect of it did not happen, there's, yeah, this other stuff has real value. That's a great point.
Yeah, I was writing about this recently. So yesterday, today's Valentine's Day, February 14th, I published my 100th consecutive daily blog. And so I was writing about it, and I had someone ask me both about that and about LinkedIn separately, what's the ROI of what you're doing there? And I said, I don't know. I don't know. I mean, who can answer that question? Yeah. You know, it's really sexy. I remember years ago, one of the guys at Buffer had calculated, and I should put that in air quotes because who knows if he actually calculated this or not, but he calculated, according to the story he told, that each new blog post or guest post was worth $500 to them. And I think that that's what a lot of people want out of these projects. Yeah. And I would say, well, if I write a daily blog, I mean, now it takes me, the one I published today was maybe 200 or 300 words. Takes me about 7 minutes to do that. You know, like I'm so fast at it. The content is better. I have more ideas all the time. Like there are so many benefits besides, is this bringing me leads? So a lot of these longer term projects that we undertake, as long as they have multiple leverage points, I don't see a whole lot of downside because you could change gears if you needed to.
Yeah. And I think there's, maybe part of that initial thinking about the project, there's probably exceptions to this, but there's going to be almost always a way to say, okay, how long do I need to do this before I even think about whether it's working?
Right.
And I think there is a minimum threshold, like, if you were going to try to build an email list and sell something to them, that's not a 1 week experiment. That's more like a 3 to 6 to 9 month experiment.
Right.
So at some point, I think it's kind of like, it's so much like trying to get into shape or lose weight through dieting and exercise. That's not a 1 week experiment. For most people, they're not even going to see any kind of difference in their level of physical ability or their, you know, body mass index or anything like that in a week. Right.
Right.
So you got to set a minimum threshold, and it's this balance of, well, I'm committing to this minimum, but also if I don't see what I'm looking for in this certain time frame, whatever that is, whatever's appropriate for it, I'm going to mercilessly kill this so I can move on to something that's a better use of my time and energy.
All right. So we've got realistic goals. Do you have your realistic goals or goals in mind? We've got leverage. We've got, can you make the time commitment and will your schedule permit it? And will you do the minimum amount that you need to do in order to make an informed decision about whether it's working or not?
Mm-hmm.
That seems like a pretty good way to make this decision.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, at a certain point, we're all constrained in terms of time. So maybe it's worth thinking about like more and more as I try to become more mature about how I manage my time, questions about, am I going to do X are the wrong way to ask it. It's like, am I going to do X at the expense of Y? You know, meaning what am I going to do less of so I can do more of this other thing?
Exactly. Yeah, I heard someone, a coach, say that that's one of the questions they always ask. Maybe it was in the coaching habit. I think one of the questions is, in order to achieve that goal, what are you willing to give up? And I think
that's a great way to phrase it.
It's such a wise thing to ask, because it is true. It's not as if I'm just sitting around doing nothing and I can fill in an extra 5 hours, no problem. You do have to give up something.
Yeah, I mean, that was me in college, you know, sitting around with, like, I could just sort of do whatever, and it didn't feel like it came at the expense of anything else. But just more and more, that's not the physics of time for me. The physics of time for me is, if I'm going to do X, it's coming at the expense of something. And so I can't add something without pulling back on something else.
Yep. Same here, man. Well, hopefully this gives all of our listeners at least somewhat of a workable model or some questions to ponder before you undertake that big thing that you're wondering about.
Yeah. So, have you heard the Kendrick Lamar soundtrack for this Black Panther movie? I have not, but I've been seeing it everywhere. People are saying, raving about it.
I heard some of it. I like to listen one or two times all the way through before I comment, but right. I'm a big fan of Kendrick.
I know. That's why I wanted to ask you about this.
Even though I find his music to be very challenging at times, I guess in the way that, you know, Aesop Rock is challenging, like it's just,
like, lyrically dense and challenging.
Well, and Kendrick's is obviously a lot more sophisticated, because it's not about using big words as much as it is about packing layers of meaning into the songs.
Yeah.
So yeah, I need to listen to it. I don't know. You should give it a listen, though. One of the songs I'm a big fan of.
Okay.
Yep.
I need to carve out time to do that this week, but it's going to have to come at the expense of something.
What are you willing to give up to listen to the Black Panther soundtrack?
Maybe goofing around on the internet. I can give up some of that.
Yeah, sounds like a plan. All right, Philip, it was good to talk to you.
You too, man. Take it easy.
All right, bye.
Bye.